Okay, today is December 1st, and it is Tetvav Kislev, and we are continuing with the 23rd chapter of Shmuel Bet. We're not finishing it yet. We'll finish it for sure next week, Bli Neder. And if we could please have in mind, as we learn today, David Yosef ben Rachel, that he should have a refuah shlema. So really, like, let's try to think of him and his recovery as we learn. Okay, so this has been a list of David's warriors that we've been doing in this chapter, with a few little narratives thrown in. So this one also, this is the last of the narratives, and after this, it's just going to be one long list of more warriors. So we're going to talk about two who are specifically mentioned this week: Avishai, who we've seen several times before. We're going to point out a highlight from his life, or it could be a low light, depending on who you are. And we are also going to explore Benayahu ben Yehoiada, who is really fascinating. I was doing a lot of research about him this week. Very interesting person in both Jewish textual history and Jewish folklore. So we're going to see who he is. Hi, Rana. We just started. Nice to see you. Okay, so here's the psukim that we're going to do. We're going to do a lot in English also today, and some I don't have English, so we'll also do Hebrew. Okay, so, and again, some of the brackets versus the kri versus ktiv, what is read versus what is written, is going to be relevant in this as well. Okay, so again, if you look at the full Perek 23, you'll see it's a list of warriors, and we're continuing on with that list. And they're divided into groups of three for some reason. And last week, we looked at many sources that said these three were nameless because they risked their lives in bringing back a halachic decision, which we don't want people to emulate that, so we left them nameless. But we're going to see, when we look at Avishai and Benayahu, hi Ruth, we just started, that there are commentaries that say that these are actually the names of the unnamed three from before. So it's either six or it's nine, and I think all these counts have to do with, they're going to actually say a number at the end, 37, and how we get to that number. So I'm not sure, but it is very confusing, and everyone's confused by it, and there are lots of different ways to understand it. So let's not worry about it. Okay, so Avishai Achiyoav ben Tsruya. Okay, so Tsruya is David's sister, and these are two of David's nephews, and we spoke about Yoav before, who was his commander and chief of the army. There's a better word for that, his general. And how he's not listed in this list, although we saw in the earlier weeks that it could be that some of the names were actually pseudonyms, and it might have actually been talking about Yoav. So we don't really know if Yoav is listed or not, but Avishai is his brother. And he was the Rosh HaShlosha, so he was the chief of the three. V'hu orer et chanito al shloshmot chalal, so he roused his sword against 300 corpses that they were. Velo shem b'shlosha, and he has a name among the three. So again, if this is a new group of three, or if this is referring to the previous nameless group of three, we don't know. Min hashlosha hachin nichbad v'hi lahem lasar v'ad hashlosha lo ba. So he was one of the three who was most honored, and he was their captain, but he didn't make it into the first three. Okay, so whether this is seven and eight, or it's four, five, six, he didn't make it into the one, two, three, which was, I think, from 2 weeks ago, that we said might have been referring either to David HaMelech himself or to Yoav. That's where we saw that. Okay, and then we have Benayahu ben Yehoiada ben Ish Chai. You see how this Chai is in the brackets? And the way we read it is Chayal. Okay, so Chai, you all know, means life. So ben Ish Chai. That's actually the name of a book by a famous Sephardi rabbi from the 1800s. We're actually going to see something by him today as well. And so that's how it's written. the son of a living man, or the way it's read is Ben Ish Chayal, the son of a valiant man or a brave man, like Eshet Chayal, the woman of valor. It's the same word, Chayal. It also means soldier. Okay, now that I mentioned that, if you haven't heard me say this before, there's a very funny translation where you can understand Eshet Chayal. I didn't make this up. So Eshet, we usually translate it as woman of valor, but Chayal means soldier. So another way to understand it is militant feminist, Eshet Chayal. Okay, I see some laughs there. Good. Okay, so we don't know. So there's going to be lots of back and forth on whether we read this as son of a living man, Chai, or son of a valiant man, Chayal. Okay, so Rav Palim, he had many deeds, Mikavtzael, and he was from this place called Kavtzael, which is mentioned in the book of Joshua as part of the land belonging to the tribe of Judah. We're going to see that in some of the sources. Hu hikat shnei Ariel, Moav. He killed two lions of Moav. You can, you know, if you've been with me long enough, you know that all of this is, we're going to find sources that they're symbolic for other things. Vehu yarad vehika etz ha'ari betoch habor. And he also smote and killed the Ari, the lion. And again, it doesn't, one of the commentaries says it doesn't matter whether there's a hay there or not, it's still lion, within the boar. So again, this is the same thing we saw last week, that it's spelt like it's a well, be'er, but the vowels is boar, like a pit. And you see here, it actually translates it as pit. It doesn't translate it as well, like we saw before. Biyom hashalig, and the day of snow. Vehu hikat ish mitzri, and he also smote an Egyptian man, ish mar'eh, a man of appearance, ubiyad hamitzri chanit, and there was a spear in the hand of the Egyptian man, vayered alav b'shavit, and he went down with just a staff, vayigzol et hachanit miyad hamitzri, and he stole the spear from the hand of the Egyptian, v'yahargehu b'chanito, and he killed him with his own spear. Now, I did not look into this deeply, but as I was doing my research, apparently this use of the word vayigzol, stealing, is the basis for a lot of halacha having to do with stealing. So I didn't go there. I don't know. But if you're interested in the laws of stealing, a lot of it apparently is based on this pasuk. Okay. And what I want to say, oh, so the one thing I want to say about that is I included the verses from Divrei Hayamim. So as you know, that for most, for a lot of the sections in Sefer Shmuel, and especially this section, this whole section in Sefer Shmuel, there is a parallel section in Divrei Hayamim, Chronicles, the last book of the Tanakh, and we've been comparing and contrasting sometimes with that. So here, the only real difference between the two was that instead of ish mar'eh, a man of appearance, it says ish midah, a man of size. So there, otherwise, we're not really going to talk about, we're not going to talk about Divrei Hayamim. Okay, so this is what he did. Ela asa b'nayahu ben Yehoyada. This is what b'nayahu ben Yehoyada did. Velo shem b'shlosha ha'gibarim. And he has a name, therefore, in the three heroes. Min ha'shloshim nichbad ve'al shlosha loba. So of the 30, he was the most honored. But again, to that first group of three mentioned, he didn't come. Ve'yasimehu David el mashmato. And David placed him over his following. So he, we're going to see, as we follow the course of his life, that he really is an important part of the royal household. Okay, so that's the Divrei Hayamim that we're not going to spend time on today. And then I just wanted to spend a minute reminding you who Avishai was, one of David's nephews. So we'll just look at this in English. If you remember, this is when Shaul is chasing David. And this is actually back when he was in the cave of Adullam that we talked about last week. And he only had 400 men, what I like to call the deplorables, with him. And they were, so it was really the darkest point of David. So at that point, David arose and came to the place where Shaul had encamped. And David saw the place where Shaul lay. And Avner, the son of Ner, the commander of the army. Okay, so remember that name, because that's actually going to, we're going to be reminded of Avner a little bit with the story of Benayahu. Now we're talking about Avishai, but all of these characters and names will come into play with Benayahu as well, the commander of his army. And Shaul was lying with the bar when the, within the barricade, and the people were encamped around him. And David spoke up and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and Avishai the son of Tzruiah, so here's Avishai, the brother of Yoav, saying, "Who will go down with me to Shaul to the camp?" And Avishai said, "I shall go down with you." And David and Avishai came to the people by night, and behold, Shaul is lying asleep within the barricade with his spear thrust into the ground at his head. And Abner and the people were lying around him. So when we actually learned that inside, because this is chapter, it's from Shmuel Aleph, so this is maybe 2 years ago, chapter 26. So we talked about how Shaul always had a weapon around him. He was always dependent on his military ability and strength and was always with a weapon, whereas David was always with his emunah. So if you remember the famous story of Goliath, where he actually tried to put on armor and gear and sword, and he was uncomfortable, and he took it all off, and he was able to kill Goliath with the five stones, and then he cut off Goliath's head with Goliath's own spear. That's Goliath, for those of you. It's one of those Hebrew names that doesn't sound so much like the English. Okay, so Shaul is described with the spear thrust into the ground at his head, and Abner and the people were lying around him. And Avishai said to David, "Today God has delivered your enemy into your hand, and now let me strike him now with the spear to the ground with one stroke, and I shall not repeat this to him." Okay, so Avishai thinks this is the opportunity to kill Shaul, who has been chasing David in order to kill him. But what is David's response? David said to Avishai, "Do not destroy him, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be accounted guiltless?" So here you see David's character, and you see Avishai's character, who is similar to his brother, Yoav, who we're going to see as well. Okay, so that was just to remind you a little bit who Avishai was, who made it to this list. And now we are going to talk about Benayahu ben Yehoiada. It's a mouthful. And so this, because when we finish Shmuel, I don't think we're going to move on to Malachim because Karen Spiro, the other adult ed teacher at Kohelet, is teaching about fathers and sons in Malachim. So I think she's going to cover a lot of Malachim. I've had some requests to do Parsha after we finish. Again, maybe we'll finish in like a month. I don't know. So if anybody else has any suggestions, I'm happy to hear them. Little aside. Okay. So this is from Perek Bet of Malachim. So David has passed away, and he left kind of a last will and testament to his son Shlomo. And he doesn't say so explicitly, but he hints that there are certain people that David would like to see Shlomo do away with in Shlomo's wisdom. Okay? So that's what's happening now. So Shlomo becomes king. And it says, "And now, as the Lord lives, who has established me and set me on the throne of David, my father, and who has made me a house, as he had promised, that Adoniyahu shall be put to death this day." So Adoniyahu is another son of David. So if you thought that when we read through the rebellion of Absalom, that David's rebellious children were finished and Shlomo would peacefully arise to the throne, you were wrong. There is an additional rebellion of Adoniyahu when Shlomo's meant to take the throne, and he says he has to be put to death for that act of treason. And King Solomon sent by the hand of Benaiahu, the son of Jehoiada, and he fell upon him that he died. So that was Benaiahu who did that job. And to Eviatar the priest, the king said, "Go to Anatot, to your own fields, for you are deservant of death. But on this day, I will not put you to death because you did bear the ark of the Lord God before David, my father, and because you are afflicted in all wherein my father was afflicted." So Eviatar was a Kohen in Nov. If you remember, Nov was the awful, horrible story of the city of priests that Shaul completely and utterly destroyed because David had fled there when he and Yonatan, Shaul's son, had established that Shaul was indeed out to get David. And he lied to them. He didn't tell them he was fleeing from Shaul. He said he was on a mission from Shaul, and they gave him bread. And there was an awful man, Doeg, who was there, who then told Shaul that the people, the Kohanim of Nov, had tried to protect David. And so Shaul ordered them all killed. And Eviatar was escaped, and he fled with David. And he became David's, like, almost personal Kohen Gadol. And David established him as the Kohen in his kingship. But at a certain point, I think with the rebellion of Absalom, he lost his Ruach HaKodesh, his divine inspiration. And so David appointed a co-Kohen, Tzadok, and they were joint priests. Eviatar actually comes from the line of Eli. And if you remember, 6 years ago when we started, Eli, the Kohen, was the one who saw Chana was drunk, and his entire line was predict what God said it would be finished off. This was Shmuel's first prophecy, that he had to tell Eli that his line would be cut off from the priesthood. So Eviatar is the last one. And Shlomo, because Eviatar joined Adoniyahu, so that name we just mentioned of David's other son that led a rebellion, Eviatar actually joined with Adoniyahu to be his Kohen. And so Shlomo spares his life, but exiles him to Anatot. Anatot is outside of Jerusalem, I think, somewhere in the area of Binyamin. And a lot of places in Israel, we know we were able to connect them to their biblical counterparts because the Arabs actually maintained this very similar names for the places. So I think it was called Anata by the Arabs that lived there before the Jews took it over. And so that's also where Jeremiah Yirmiyahu comes from, who is also a Kohen. So it's an interesting place. Okay, so he gets banished there. So Solomon banished Eviatar from being priest to the Lord that he might fulfill the word of the Lord, which he spoke concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. So that's what I told you. Okay, so I included that just because he was another character to see sort of a postscript what happens. And the tidings came to Yoav. Okay, so back to Yoav, who's been causing us all this trouble. For Yoav had turned after Adoniyahu, and after Absalom he did not turn, and Yoav fled into the tabernacle of the Lord and took hold of the horns of the altar. Okay, so he also joined forces with Adoniyahu. And it was told King Solomon that Yoav fled into the tabernacle of the Lord. And we saw this, I think, 2 weeks ago when we were comparing the names where the rabbinic tradition was either that it might all represent David HaMelech or that it might all represent Yoav or that it might be three individual men that we've just never heard of before, okay? So this was in the opinion that it was Yoav, but I didn't stress at all the Benayahu part of it. So we're reading it again to see the Benayahu part. So he flees into the tabernacle of the Lord, and behold, he is by the altar, and Solomon sent Benayahu, the son of Jehoiada, saying, go fall upon him, meaning kill him. And Benayahu came to the tabernacle of the Lord and said to him, thus said the king, come forth. And he said, no, for I will die here. And if you remember, we spoke about 2 weeks ago that Yoav, even he knew he'd be killed, he knew he wasn't innocent, and that even though he was at the altar, he would still be killed. But if he was killed at the altar without having a trial, per se, then he could be given a proper burial with his family, as opposed to being declared, whatever he would be declared, and then he would not get a proper burial with his family. He'd be buried outside of that. So that's why he did this. Not that he thought he wouldn't be killed. Okay, so he said, no, I will die here. And Benayahu brought back word to the king, saying, thus spoke Yoav, and thus he answered me. And the king said, do as he said, and fall upon him, and bury him, that you may take away the innocent blood which Yoav said from me and from my father's house. And the Lord shall return his blood upon his own head, that he fell upon two men more righteous and better than he, and slew them with the sword. And my father David did not know it. Avner, okay, so Shaul's head guy, after Shaul died, and they tried... The two camps were united, the camp of Shaul and the camp of David, into one united kingdom. So David appointed Avner, a senior position in his army, to try to get everyone together, and Yoav killed him. And Amasa, the son of Yatir, captain of the host of Yehuda. So he killed both of these men, and it was also bad for David. It looked like David had ordered him to do so. So David had to take actions to show that he had nothing to do with their killing. And their blood shall return upon the head of Yoav and upon the head of his seed forever. But upon David and upon his seed and upon his house and upon his throne, there shall be peace forever from the Lord. And Benaiahu, the son of Jehoiada, went up and fell upon him and slew him, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. And the king put Benaiahu, the son of Jehoiada, in his place over the host, and Tzadok, remember, Tzadok was the co-priest with Aviatar, so he now becomes the sole priest, in the sole Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash. The priest did the king put in the place of Aviatar. And the king sent and called for Shimi. Okay, anybody remember Shimi ben Gera? He cursed David, and David said, I deserve this curse, and he wouldn't let his people kill him. And Shimi felt bad, and he did apologize, but he still cursed the king. So this is David saying to Shlomo, Shlomo said to Shimi, sorry, because David said, you have to find a way to get rid of this guy in the previous chapter. Build for yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go forth here or there. And it shall be on the day that you go out and you pass over the Kidron Valley, and you shall know for certain that you shall surely die. So he's saying, you must stay in Jerusalem for the rest of your life. The day you leave, you'll die. So he stays there for 3 years. And then, just summarizing, two of his slaves run off to Achish. You probably remember Achish. That's where David tried to flee to when Shaul was chasing him. So Achish is the king of the Plishtim, the Philistines, but David was immediately recognized as the person who killed Goliath, the hero of the Plishtim, and so David realized it was not the right place to go, and he actually acted like an insane person, and the king said, what, I need more insane people in my country? Get this guy out of here. It was like a comic relief chapter, if you remember it. If you don't, it's a good chapter to read. And so Shlomo hears that he left his house in Jerusalem, and so he says, that was the command, you have to die. And sure enough, the king commanded Benaiahu, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and fell upon him, and he died. And the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Okay, so that is how we see Benaiahu continue in this very large role, sort of the king's henchman, right, of going out and killing everybody. It's very interesting, and yet we're going to see the rabbinic tradition shows him as a really righteous man. Okay, so again, we're just going to read this in English. So this first part isn't so relevant to the story, but I included it because if any of you were ever curious about the source of why men should tuck their tzitzis in a cemetery, this is it. So the Gemara relates that Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonatan were walking in a cemetery, and the sky blue string, that's the tchelet, of Rabbi Yonatan's ritual fringes was cast to the ground and dragging across the graves. Rabbi Chiya said to him, lift it, so the dead will not say, tomorrow, when their day comes, they will come to be buried with us, and now they are insulting us. Rabbi Yochanan said to him, do the dead know so much? Isn't it stated, and the dead know nothing? Rabbi Chiya said to him, if you read the verse, you did not read it a second time, and if you read it a second time, you did not read it a third time. And if you read it a third time, they did not explain it to you properly. So he's insulting him. The meaning of the verse, for the living know that they will die, and the dead know nothing and have no more reward, for their memory has been forgotten. For the living know that they will die, these are the righteous, who even in their death are called living. An allusion to this is as it is stated, and here's our guy, Benaiahu, the son of Jehoiada. And you remember, it either said Ben Ish Chai or Ben Ish Chayal, valiant. The son of man of Kapzel, who had done mighty deeds, he smote the two altar hearths of Moab. So again, we said Ariel, lions, and here it's saying two altar hearths of Moab. So you can already see the symbolism in this translation. He went down also and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in time of snow. He was referred to in the verse as the son of a living man, Ben Ish Chai. Gemara wonders, is that to say the fact that the Bible referred to him with that appellation that all others are children of the dead? Rather, the verse should be explained as follows. The son of a living man who lives forever, who even in death is referred to as living. Man of Kapzel, so what does that word mean of that place, who had done mighty deeds as he accumulated, kovets, like a kibbutz, to accumulate and gathered many workers for the sake of Torah, who killed the two lion-hearted men, Ariel of Moab, as after his death he left no one his equal in either the first temple or the second temple periods, as the temple is called Ariel. And the two Ariel refers to the two temples. The sages disagreed over the interpretation of the rest of the verse, and who descended and slew the lion in the pit on the snowy day. Some say that this means that he broke blocks of hail and descended and immersed himself in the water to purify himself. Okay, so actually, it's interesting because according to all the traditions, Benayahu was actually a Kohen. So what's he doing going around killing all these people? Kohanim, because of their work in the temple, are supposed to maintain this state of ritual purity more so than other people. Kohanim today still shouldn't go into cemeteries. And if you are ever in an Israeli hospital, there's actually signs on the before you enter any particular wing in an Israeli hospital that will say if there's a dead person in that wing so that a Kohen doesn't go to it. Also, I think Kohanim usually try to fly to Israel out of Newark as opposed to JFK. Might be the opposite because one of them specifically does not take bodies for burial to Israel as opposed to the other one. So it's just, we're going to talk about that a little bit in one of the other sources. But here it has him purifying himself in these big blocks of hail. But again, it wouldn't be enough for a Kohen. He would need the red heifer purification. So I don't know. Others say that he learned all of the Sifra, the halachic midrash on the book of Leviticus of the school of Rav on a winter's day. So that's pretty serious learning to learn all of that in one day. And the winter's day, meaning it was a short day as opposed to a summer day, which would be a long day. Okay, so it's just saying how brilliant he was. Okay, so now we have the Radak on him, and he repeats a lot of this Gemara that we just read. So we're not going to read that, but we're going to read. Okay, so we're going to read about the lions. So it's Shnei Ariel Moav. Okay, right. So he first says that the two lions of Moab is like the Targum, the Aramaic translation, which says that it is a compound word. It comes from lion and it comes from power. El also means God, and then we would say Kel, but El also means power. The Ari Yeshlo Gevura ve'El. So a lion has both power and strength and power. Hu Lashon Chozek. It's a language of strength. Ve'afal pi shaya Benayahu Kohen, even though Benayahu was a Kohen, ve'asor lehitameh lemetim, and he couldn't become, it's forbidden to become impure for dead. Lehilachem be'oyvei Hashem hu mitzvah. To wage war against the enemies of God is actually a mitzvah, a commandment. Shetzivah HaKadosh Baruch Hu lehilachem b'shiva goyim. God had commanded them to wage war against the seven nations in the land of Canaan, ubishar ha'umot ha'mitzarot liYisrael, and the rest of the nations that would cause trouble to Israel, lo chilek ben kohanim liYisrael, and he made no distinction between the priests and between Israel. V'chein tziva liyot kohen mashuach melchama, and he was also commanded to be the kohen mashuach melchama. This is very interesting. If you know the story of Kimchi, she's the woman in the Talmud that the walls of her house didn't see any of her hair. She never uncovered her hair, and she merited to have seven high priests. So a lot of people ask the question, is that such a merit to have seven high priests? Don't they have to die in order to replace each other? So I think the way to understand it is that the Kohen Mashuach, which means the anointed priest, could be temporary for war. So there was the high priest that would stay in the Beis Hamikdash, but then when the Jewish people went out to war, there was a temporary additional, I think I'm understanding this right, I might be wrong, additional high priest that would go out to war with the people. And of course, then they would come in contact with dead bodies. But that was a sacrifice that this particular Kohen would have to make for the sake of Bnei Israel, and they're waging war. Because he would be anointed for war, ulhikanes im Yisrael lemilchama, and he would go into war with Israel. Behine Pinchas timeatzmo lemitzvah. And Pinchas, who was also a Kohen, he was the grandson of Aaron, he made himself impure as a mitzvah, commandment, kishaharag Zimri v'Kozbi, when he killed Zimri and Kozbi, who were being inappropriate in front of the tent of meeting. V'chein halach lemilchamet Midian im Yisrael. And he also went out to war with Midian, with the nation, with Israel. Okay, and then Biyom Hashalig. Amru ki ha'arye biyom tzina v'shalig nosefet gvurato. So he's understanding this literally as a lion, and he's saying that on a cold, snowy day, the lion actually has extra strength. And as our rabbi said, and this is from the Gemara, but he adds something, so I wanted to read it with you. It's Shnei Ariel, Shalohi Niach Kamotu Lo B'Mikdash Rishon V'Lo B'Mikdash Sheni. There was no one like him in either the time period of the first temple or the second. Ariel Shem Beit HaMikdash, and Ariel is the name of the Beit HaMikdash, like we saw in the Pasuk in Yeshayahu. Uperush Moav, and this is what he adds, the explanation of Moav. Why is it called the Lion of Moav? Shebana oto Shlomo, because Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. Sheba mirut haMoavia, who he came, he was the great-great-grandson of Rut the Moabite. Okay, and then it just continues on with what the Gemara said. Okay, the Malvim is, he is so Benayahu. Hagibor Hasheni haya Benayahu. So he is saying the second hero was Benayahu. Haya ben ish chayal verov palim. He was a man of valor and many actions. V'haya mi'ir Kavtziel b'chalko sheYehuda. And he was from Kavtziel, who was from the area of Yehuda, as you see in the book of Joshua. V'hu her'eh shalosh gvurot atumot. And he showed three incredible acts of strength. Aleph, the first one, shehikash shnei Ariel Moav. Ratzon lomar giborei Moav. So he has a different take. He says his first act of strength was that he smote two lions of Moab, which the Malbim explains having nothing to do with the temples, but rather two great heroes, Moabite warriors. Bet Sheika Ari, he killed a lion. Im Hayoto Bibur, Shalo Ubiyom Hashalig. He was, whether he was in his own pit or on a snowy day, She Az Ha'adam Mitzonen Ve'ari Yitgaber. Us. So a man would get sick from the cold, and the lion would have even greater strength, and he, Benayahu, was able to kill him nonetheless. Okay, now this, I couldn't not share it, even though I don't really understand it. So it's the Ya'arot Devash, which is a book by Rav Yonatan Eibshitz, from, you see his dates here. And he, if you've ever heard of the big disagreement about the Sabbateans, he's part of that. But his, so he was suspected of the Rav Emden and Rav Eibshitz, if you've ever heard of this. It's a very interesting time in Jewish history with Shabtai Tzvi and those who followed him and those who didn't follow him. And it created lots of terrible strife in the Jewish people. So this is one of his books, and it's also very Kabbalistic. Okay, so I'm not going to explain it very in-depth, but it mentioned our pasuk, and it was just too interesting not to share. Okay, so, v'de'u ki yishne mine mashchitim, arye v'kelev. There are two forms of destruction, a lion and a dog. As it's written in Tehillim, hoshiani mipi arye, save me from the mouth of a lion, v'chein miad kelev yechidati, and also my special one from the hand of the dog. So that's all in Tehillim Kaf Bet. V'ha shote yayin shel akum nidun mipi ya'arye. So if you drink wine that belongs to a non-Jew, you're judged of the mouth of a lion. Okay? Ki hu ez shebechayot, because he's the strongest of the beasts. V'yayin ez betzmatchim, and wine is the strongest of plants. Ulechach amru b'midrash, and therefore it says in midrash, b'noach sheshata yain shehikishu aryeh. Noach, we know he drank wine because he planted a vineyard as soon as he got out of the boat. And the Midrash tells us that a lion had bit him at one point when he was delayed in feeding the animals. He was late in feeding the animals, the lion, and the lion therefore thrashed out at him. So that's the connection of wine and lions for Noach. Okay. V'hashota yayin nesach nidun b'gehenem shashalik. So the one who drinks wine, not that it just belonged to a non-Jew, but it was actually used in idolatrous rites, that's what yayin nesach is, he's judged in the hell of snow, the gehenem of snow. Ki yayin molid chomo, because wine makes a person who drinks it warm. Kasher marti, and like I said, sofo livo be'ila asura, in the end, he will have inappropriate sexual relations. Yosef, ilu shetayin b'mitzrayim, lo haya nitzul mipotifara. Had Joseph drunk wine in Egypt, he would not have been saved from Potiphar. Aval amru, but they say in the Midrash that Yosef took on nizirut, he became a nazir, that he made a vow that he wouldn't drink wine except for with his brothers. So when he had a feast with his brothers, he did drink wine, but otherwise he never drank wine. Sheyeinam mitameh b'maga, because their wine impurifies you by touch. Lechach nitzul mi'avonza, therefore he was saved from this sin. Lechach ne'amar, and it says there's a supporting pasuk in Echa that the Nazirim, it's Nazir merited it from the snow, because it was ki al yedei nazirut miyayin. Okay, not sure what that's referring to. Nitzulim megehenim shel shalag, they were saved from the hell of snow. V'lechach ne'amar b'Benayahu, so now here's where it's relevant to us, and therefore it says with regard to Benayahu, she'ayat tzadik, he was a tzadik, hu hika et ha'ari b'toch habur b'yom ha'shalag. So you see, our pasuk combines both these two elements. He smote the lion in the pit on a snowy day. So we have lion and snow. Kishnehem mashkitim ke'echad. They're both destroyed like one. So Benayahu was above all of that, and he merited to be above all of that. Okay, so now this is very interesting. So this is by Schneur Lyman, who's a famous historian at Yeshiva University, and he wrote an article about this woman, Judith Ish Kishur, who lived in the 1900s. She was born in Boston and raised in London. And then she returned to the US and she went to Hunter College. And she was a pioneer writer of juvenile literature for Jewish children in America. So she wrote a lot of Jewish folklore tales. Her sisters also were famous. And she wrote, it's She wrote the story of Benayahu, and it's this very interesting story. It's not in any Midrashim. The earliest in my research I was able to see a mention of this story in general was from the 1700s in Jewish literature. It didn't mention Benayahu. It's also seen in some Arabic literature. Apparently, Abraham Lincoln even talked about it. I'm sure you've heard this story of the king who had a ring. Okay, I want you to find me a certain wonderful ring so that I can wear it at the Sukkot festival that will give you 6 months for the search. If the ring exists under heaven, my Lord, you shall have it. So this is the, so King Solomon sends Benayahu to find this ring, and this ring is the one that says, Gamze Yavor, this too shall pass. Okay, so if you want, you can open up the document from the source sheets and you can read this story. And Benayahu is really the hero of this story, and he finds the ring. Okay, so you can read that yourselves. So that was very interesting. So now what makes it even more interesting is that who should mention this story? He doesn't mention, I didn't find him mentioning Benayahu with regard to this story, but remember, Benayahu ben Yehoyada Ben Ish Chai, according to what's written, the son of a living man. Okay, so who mentions this story? None other than the Ben Ish Chai. Okay, so the Ben Ish Chai was Rabbi Yosef Chaim ben Eliyahu al-Chacham. He was born in Baghdad in 1835 and studied under Rabbi Abdullah Somer. If you're Ashkenazi like me, you're unfortunately not as educated in some of these very famous, brilliant Sephardi rabbis, Mizrahi rabbis. Okay, so, but the Ben Ish Chai is a famous book of shortened halacha. So it says here, even in the biography, comparable to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, popular among Ashkenazi Jews. Okay? And it remains very popular among Sephardi Jews to this day. They still paskin by it. Okay, so we're not going to read through it, but he, oh yeah, I do want to read through it because it's very interesting, the context. Okay, so Masha tok'in tkiat shvarim betrua v'tkiah. So he's talking about Rosh Hashanah, and he is talking about the sounding of the shofar. So that which we blow, tkiah, shvarim, trua, and then tkiah, this is the first order. That is because the tkiah hints at simcha and goodness. The shvarim and trua, those are the broken up sounds, hint at pain and suffering, because it's yalule yalil, it's broken up. Vize gnuche gnach, okay, the vilachach, enosin tkiah v'sharim b'meshech echad u'nishima achat. And so you don't do the tkiah, the one blow, and the broken blows with one breath. And it's written in the Levush, another halachic work, because it hints at simcha, v'zo lehefech, and this is the opposite, v'ein le'arvam yachad. We don't mix up the broken blasts with the full blasts. V'hine yadua ha'maseh be'oto she'asa taba'at, and it's known, this incident of the one who made the ring, v'katava leha gam ze yavor, and it's written on it, this too shall pass. V'im hu betza'ar, az yirana v'yitnachem. If he's in pain, he'll see it and he'll be comforted. V'im hu betova, and if he's in a good place, yirana v'lo yavo lehitga'ot betuvo, be'oshro. He won't become haughty in his goodness and his riches. Ki yachshov shegam ze yavor, because he'll think this too shall pass. V'ein lo kiyum, and it has no sustainability. V'chein kan, and so here, tok'im achar tkiah haromezet letova v'simcha. We blow after the tkiah, the one long blow, which hints at goodness and happiness. Shvarim, a broken blast, shehem romzim lasa'ar v'yisurim, that they hint at pain and troubles. Lermoz la'adam, and we do this to hint to man, shelo yitga'e betuvato v'yigba'libo, that he shouldn't be prideful in his goodness and be haughty. Ki tzorach lachshov achar simcha yavo letuga, because we always need to think after happiness comes not so happy times. V'tok'im achar ha'truah, ha'romezed l'sar v'yusurim, odapam tkiah, but we end with a tkiah, one blow, not a broken one. Ha'romezed l'tova, that hints at goodness. Lermoz, im omed v'tza'ar, to hint that if you're standing in pain or suffering, al yitya'esh min ha'rachamim, don't despair from God, ele yachshov sof ha'kavod lavo. Rather think in the end honor will come. V'yir'e yemei tova v'simcha, and he will see again days of goodness and happiness. Okay, so you get the idea. I just thought it was nice and that it was written. So that's the Ben Ish Chai. Benayo ben Yehodaya ben Ish Chai. He takes that name, so even though he doesn't mention it, he's the other one that says that story. Okay, now the last source is another crazy story. And you can This is actually in the Gemara, so you can kind of see where the story of the ring comes from, just based on Shlomo HaMelech, both in the text of the Tanakh itself, sending Benayahu out to do his bidding. So here also in this crazy story, Shlomo HaMelech needs the shamir. The shamir was that worm that could cut stones. There's actually an article a couple years ago about they found a worm that could cut through like solid objects or something. And there's a whole discussion whether that might have been the original Shamir. So the law is, the halacha is, it's in Shmot right after the Ten Commandments, that you can't have any metal touch the rocks of the altar because metal makes weapons. So they had to find a way of cutting the rocks without any metal. So there was this shamir, this worm that ate through stone and could cut it perfectly. So I think I'm going to let you read this story yourself because it is a crazy story with demons. And somehow Benayahu goes on this hunt, this message, and he is able to, through many adventures having to do with demons and wild roosters, able to bring back the shamir to Shlomo HaMelech so that Shlomo HaMelech could properly build the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So I hope you enjoyed these forays into these interesting men on our list. We did just a little bit reminding of us of who Avishai was, and also Yoav, his brother, and their place in David's court. And we also saw it overlap with Benayahu ben Yehoiada ben Ish Chai or Chayil, in terms of his responsibility to kill Yoav and his place in Shlomo HaMelech's court. And a lot of bloodshed, but also he's thought of by the rabbis and by Jewish folklore as this hero who always did the bidding of the king, no matter what type of obstacles came before him. He was loyal to the king. And I hope you enjoyed the stories. And thank you.